Senate, please come to order. Reports from standing committees. Any reports from standing committees?
February the 26th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 123 in gross, Uniform Administrative Code and Database, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas Ross, and Rothfuss, Tony, Senator Ross, Chairman. February 26, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 36, Constituent Service Allowance, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Ross, and Rothfuss, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 26, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 62, General Procedures for Licensure Boards, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senator Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas Ross, and Rothfuss, Senator Ross, Chairman. February the 26, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriation, to whom was referred House Bill 5, engrossed, Education, Required School Bus Video Equipment 2, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Hastert, Meyer, and Perkins. No, Senator Bebout, Senator Bebout, Chairman. February the 26, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 106, engrossed, County Firework Bans, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 26, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 98, engrossed State Investment Services, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman. February the 26, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 61, engrossed, Failure to Extinguish or Contain Fire, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman. That's it.
All right. We are at that order of business. Excuse me. Senator Coe.
Party floor leader. What are you doing up there?
Just hanging out in the chair. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
May I have privilege of the floor?
You may, Senator Coe.
I'd like to introduce Bruce Eldridge, who's the executive director of the Buffalo Bill Center of the West. And also up in the gallery up here, we have Rebecca Taggart, who's down here, Kelly Jensen, Gretchen Heinrich, Megan Smith, and Tom Roberson. Would you please stand and welcome them?
Welcome.
Please stand.
All right. We are at that order of business for consideration of bills on general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. You have heard the motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion has carried. Senator Kraft.
Thank
The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 32. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 32, sponsored by the Travel Committee, Snowmobile Permit and Registration Fees, an act relating to snowmobiles. It was referred to Committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Burns, Kraft, and Driscoll. No, Senator Christensen. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Burns.
Recommendation on the House.
House Bill 32, Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 6, line 9.
Madam Chair, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment at this point, and I would like to explain it and get a vote on that before I ask Senator Barnard to explain the rest of the bill. On page 6, on line 9, currently under current statute, after you buy a snowmobile, you have 16 days in which to register it and get the title and pay the fees and so forth. This is something that was actually kind of left over from before we were titling snowmobiles. So what this amendment simply does is it matches both trailers and vehicles and other titled vehicles at the 30 days that you have to get it registered. So, Madam Chair, unless there are any questions on that, I would ask for a vote on the Standing Committee Amendment.
Question or discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill number 32, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried. We're back on the bill. Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. And for the further explanation of this fine bill, I would ask that you call on the good senator from the southwest part of the state.
Senator Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring you today House Bill number 32. This is a bill relating to snowmobile fees. It does basically five things. And the first thing it does is it takes the selling agent who used to get $5 per transaction, and we put that $5 into the actual tag fee. So it's still there, but instead of showing up as a $5 fee, it's put onto the actual price of the tag. The second thing we did was we made the selling agent get $1 per transaction. So when they have it, so when you go and get a snowmobile tag, a dollar of that goes back to the selling agent. The third thing it does is it raises the fees for the snowmobile fees. These are paid yearly. The year that you do this is from July 31st to June 1st to July 31st, and so we make these snowmobile tags be paid in the summer, because if you don't do that and do have the tags go at, like at a Christmas or a New Year's, then they'll pay for those twice. And so this makes it so that they only pay for the tag one time. The tags used to cost $20. When you add the $5 in and the $10 that the increase is, they come out to be $35. This is for both a resident and a non-resident snowmobiler. So it doesn't make any difference whether you're resident or non-resident. You pay the same fee. It raises the fee from the commercial snowmobilers from $75 up to $105. And so that is, if people who are running these snowmobiles for commercial purposes, they have to pay that fee. This also makes the residents and the non-residents the same. I think this was a good addition to the bill, because some of these non-residents, they'll buy a tag in Utah, Wyoming, Colorado, maybe Montana, Idaho. So this kind of keeps the tags their price down and makes them so they're going to come to our state and not have to pay a big fee to do that. And as the good senator from Sheridan told you, we changed the time from when you buy the snowmobile to you register it from 16 days to 30. Mr. Chairman, This was an interim bill. We heard a lot of testimony about it, and of course there's some people who don't want the snowmobile fees raised up. All the major snowmobile groups and organizations came and testified, and they all testified that they would be fine with a $10 increase. It's been over 10 years since these fees were changed and increased. You had inflation on that, and probably the $10 we charged didn't even cover probably most of the inflation that happened. Wyoming has some of the best snowmobile trails in the country. We attract people from all over the country. And when these snowmobile trails aren't taken care of, then people won't come. And it doesn't take them long to find out that they're not being groomed, and they'll go someplace else, Idaho, Montana, someplace else. If the trails aren't groomed, then there's a great increased percentage of people that get lost on them. I don't know if you've ever been on a snowmobile like that. You start tooling around, and pretty soon sometimes you don't know where you're at. And if you have a groomed trail, you can get on a groomed trail, and it'll take you back home. Most of these snowmobiles, when you're new nowadays, if you get a really hot shot snowmobile, they cost anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000. So a $10 increase per year is really a small thing. I don't have anything else. I would just ask for your help on this bill. Thank you. Stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Rothfuss.
States' license fees are compared to our own. I'd like to hear that data if you have it available.
Senator Barnard. Senator Hines.
Madam Chairman, I have a question. I see where you're no longer requiring, if I understand it right, proof for that the sales tax have been paid. Can you explain the reason why this has been changed?
Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, I don't have the exact figures for the good senator from Laramie, but it would bring them up to be comparable. Right now, ours are somewhat lower. In most states, there are a couple of states that where they're lower, but they don't have nearly the amount of grooming that we have. As to the good senator from Campbell County, the reason that we removed that is language that's left over from before snowmobiles were titled. So you had to have proof that you had paid the sales tax on it, but once it's titled and registered, that itself is proof that you have paid the sales tax already. And the other thing I wanted to mention was the fact that it was actually the snowmobile associations that approached us for this. This money goes to grooming and to warm shelters and so forth. This is not something that started in the legislature. It started with the riders themselves.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, I forgot one thing. It used to be that if your tag on your snowmobile got brushed off or got mutilated and they couldn't read it, you just had to pay a dollar to get a new tag. They found out the people who were taking these tags that they paid a dollar for, putting them on their friend's snowmobile. So they raised that fee up from a dollar up to about $17.50. So we're trying to stop some cheating here.
Senator Burns.
There too, before we have third reading, I will get the comparable prices for other states.
Thank you. Further discussion, Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, a couple of questions I have on this. It's a good senator from up in Sheridan County talked about the associations brought this. But what I'd like to know is we should be able to go to the county, the licensing, and find out how many snowmobiles there are in the state of Wyoming and how many of those belong to an association. My concern here is that in a good part of my area, there is absolutely no groomed trails, and this just looks to me like a tax on the many to pay for the recreation of a few. But I would like to know what the breakout is of how many people in the associations versus how many people that actually own snowmobiles. Second question on that, I got a question on the definition of commercial use. I've got a lot of companies in my area that when we have heavy winters that typically have to go check their wells with snow machines. A couple of years ago, they had to go out and lease a lot of snow machines for a month to be able to get their pumpers into these wells. And the way I read this, they would fall under the commercial snow machine because there's no definition of what constitutes a commercial snow machine in here. So I'm a little concerned, while the association may be pushing this, do they represent a large fraction of all the snow machine owners? Getting to the issue of the commercial use, a 40% increase in a tax in 1 year is a pretty big increase.
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman. We have to go on the testimony that we get, and I realize that there's people that don't belong to the associations that might protest the increase in the fees. But we just heard really good testimony that this was necessary, that our snowmobile trails were not coming up to snuff, and they needed this extra care, needed this extra money. Obviously, in 10 years, if you have the forces of inflation active, that's not that big of an increase. That was what we felt. Also, for the good senator from Carbon County, as far as the commercial thing goes, commercial snowmobiles are people like in Bear River snow, Bear River snowmobilers in Evanston. When you go south into the Uintas, there's a company there that rents the snowmobiles for the day, and those are the commercial snowmobiles, like the kind they have in West Yellowstone. Where other people ride them, other people own them, the other people ride them. Those are commercial, and I don't think that the people that use their snowmobiles for their business are going to have to pay that extra tax. I forgot one other thing. Sorry. If you buy a snowmobile and you ride it on just your own personal property and you don't ride it on public lands, then you don't have to buy a tag. So.
Further discussion, Senator Burns.
Chair, that was the point I was going to make. If you look on page 8, for those constituents that are checking their own wells and so forth, there are no patrols on private lands. That is specifically excluded. This is only on public lands that you have to have this. And as to the number of snowmobilers versus those in the association, I have no idea. We've been dealing with this issue for about 4 or 5 years, and I've never heard that figure.
Further discussion. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, the trouble with the exemption is that I suppose it works fine in the eastern third of the state, but in the western third and where we are in the middle third, virtually impossible to keep the snowmobile to private land. It's so interspersed with federal, if you go out there, you're going to be on both.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chairman, the example of a company renting snow machines for a month, I would submit that's a commercial use, and the guy renting the snow machine is a commercial user and probably has paid the commercial price.
Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, you know, just to put things in perspective here, it's a 40% increase is not over for 1 year. This is over 10 years. And I think it's in line with inflation and what it's been over the last 10 years. They've had to reduce the number of miles that they can groom. And the other thing to put in perspective is the fact that you're talking about hauling a $10,000 to $15,000 machine that people are using and paying $35, I think, to get the number of miles of grooming. I think it's frankly a small price to pay, and for those who made, and we've gotten this, and we got this during the interim, some people who, there are no groom trails in their area. The fact is that this also pays for and covers a lot of the tourism for the state of Wyoming, and we all benefit from that.
Further discussion on the bill. Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, I guess I understand the tourism, but everybody's already paying part of the gas tax associated that's collected that goes from the snow machine. And does that go into the grooming, or does that go back to the general fund or Department of Transportation? But I still get to the issue that I think the good tall senator from Natrona County, I mean, most of my district is 80% federal. A lot of it's in the checkerboard. And the way I read this, even if a guy goes from his private and has to cross the checkerboard to go out and check a well, go check cows or whatever for the purposes of work is what they own these snow machines. Now they're paying a fee to somebody else have a groomed trail. And I just want to know if that was discussed in the interim and what the discussions were for those people who don't use groom trails, never will use groom trails, use a snow machine for work, and how is this tax equitable for those folks?
Senator Burns.
Madam Chair, agriculture is specifically exempted from this, and that's already in statute and has been for quite a while. And as to the amount of money that comes from the gas tax, a portion of that goes to snowmobiles, but that is for trails, for all kinds of trails, including ATV trails, dirt bike trails, hiking trails, things like that.
Further discussion? Senator Christensen.
Madam Chairman, just for the good senator from the South Central, some of the money is going to be used for drones to keep an eye on you. And, while I'll be supporting the bill, you know, we are talking about the high-end machines. Don't forget, this does apply to all machines. And so we have tried to respect, you know, the private landowners that don't take it onto the public land. And just answer your questions and help you along.
Senator Burns.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm sorry, but I have to disagree with that characterization. If you look at page 8, it's snowmobiles used exclusively on private land are exempted, and they're also exempted for ranching work, for agriculture purposes.
Further discussion on the bill? Question having been called, those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill Number 32, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
House Bill Number 32 has passed the Senate, has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill Number 43. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill Number 43, sponsored by Representative Gingery. Children in Need of Supervision Age, an act relating to children in need of supervision. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Absent, Senator Burns, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Schiffer?
Madam Chairman, from the Committee of the Whole rise to report, move it do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill Number 43, Children in Need of Supervision, Age. Madam Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd like it read in at this time.
House Bill 43, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 20.
Madam Chairman, I'll go ahead and move the standing committee amendment, and I'd like to discuss this great bill and the amendment. I'd like to yield the floor to Senator Christensen.
Senator Christensen.
Chairman, Senate Bill 43 is about changing the age for children need of supervision, and we'll just cut right to it. Down at the bottom of page 1, we get into the definition of it. Child in need of supervision means any child who has not reached his, today's language is 17th birthday, who is habitually truant, has run away from home, or habitually disobeys reasonable or lawful demands of his parents, guardian, custodian or other proper authority, or is ungovernable or beyond control. And child in need of supervision includes any child who has not reached his 17th birthday, that's the old language, who has committed a status offense. This came about as a result of a ruling in one of the courts over in Natrona County, where the judge got in and looked at the statutes and saw where typically people understood when they were dealing with the CHINS cases that it was until they became adults. And the way the statute was worded, in fact, describes it on their 17th birthday. It no longer applies, creating a year vacuum in there, that lapse in the opportunity for service. And as some of the professionals in the field felt, this was a very vulnerable time where to take away the sideboards that existed out there when they used the CHINS statute. Didn't give the kids the support they needed. Typically, CHINS is used not as a punishment statute, but as an opportunity and ability for Department of Family Services to get involved and provide services to families. And that's the issue in a nutshell. I'd stand for any questions.
Discussion on the bill. Senator Nutting.
Madam Chairman, I'd like to ask for a definition of supervision. Does that mean overnight supervision, or you check in with them once a month, or is it that they can't be alone at all?
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Senator, what that's referring to typically is program supervision. It might have to do with treatment. It might have to do with counseling. It might have to do with school programs and so forth. It's not talking about a jail-type physical supervision or restriction.
Further discussion? There is an amendment. Is there discussion on the amendment? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment number 1 to House Bill number 43, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Is there question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 43. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 43 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 71. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 71, sponsored by Representative Stubson, Leasing of Equipment, and Act Relating to Capital Leasing by School Districts, was referred to Committee number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Barnard, Cole, Landon, and Rothfuss, Senator Co-Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Madam Chairman, move the committee the whole rise and report. Do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 71, and I defer to Senator Landon.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. If this bill, fellow senators, looks familiar, that's because it is. The same issue that we talked about a year ago, I would submit to you that this little House bill comes back to us in a tighter form, a little bit better put together. Just to remind you, what brought this bill about, fellow senators, was an attorney general's opinion a little over a year ago that clouded the issue of capital leasing for our school districts. Because of that opinion, all capital leasing of equipment or buses, for example, now has to go through school facilities. If you'd like, Madam Chairman, I have that opinion. It's about 45 pages, and I'll start on page 1 and read that. Well, all right, I'll tell you what. I'll go to the short answer, and my legal friends will understand what that is. But in answer to the district's query, the Attorney General came back with this. The district's proposed lease finance mechanism based upon the information provided is not permitted under Wyoming statutory law. Capital leasing is authorized under Wyoming Statute 21-3-111A, subparagraph II, but only in accordance with guidelines and parameters established in 21-15-112 and other enactments therein. 21-15-112 is our school facilities area, and what that does, senators, is that it forces school districts to go through the onerous process of school facilities in situations where all they really want to do is go out there and lease some copy machines. Every single district in the state, according to testimony that we received in committee, currently has some form of leasing with regard to buses. And that's primarily due to the fact that it's a cash flow situation. The capital, the leasing is actually a lease buy option, but what this allows the districts to do is to manage cash flow more than anything else. So really what House Bill 71 is, I think, is a tool for them to be able to manage their cash flow. One legal bonding expert testified that he believed the statute was never really meant to encompass things other than buildings. And if you go to the bill, fellow senators, that's pretty carefully crafted this time around, I think. You'll notice that on page 2, there's a reference to real property. The word fixture comes in. That also is a legal term that tightens that up a little bit. So that what we're talking about is property, land, and fixtures. And you'll notice that we take the word capital out of there. That allows us and allows our districts to be able to affect some of these leasing options. I'll do the best I can, Madam Chairman, to stand for any questions. Thanks.
Questions on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 71, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 71 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 91. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 91, sponsored by Representative Stubson, Real Estate Loans Limitations, and Act Relating to Banks and Restricted Transactions. It was referred to Committee number 9, Mineral Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 02, Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a do pass recommendation on House Bill 91. There is no standing committee amendments, and I'll yield to Senator Coe to explain the bill.
Senator Coe.
House Bill 91, Real Estate Loans Limitations, really goes in and gives some regulatory relief as it relates to loan-to-value. Currently, in Statute 13-3401V, that percentage is at 90%. What that does, it repeals that to make loans in state-chartered banks on an even playing field with FDIC banks. So it eliminates what we called, or what they called in committee, the competitive disadvantage between state banks and national charters. So it levels the playing field. It's a very simple bill. Wyoming Bankers Association supports it. Takes an antiquated law that needs to be repealed. I'd ask for your support.
Discussion on the bill? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 91, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 91 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 96. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 96, sponsored by Representative Stubson, Professional Assistant Programs, an act relating to professional assistant programs. Was referred to Committee number 7, Corporation Lexington Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Hines, Johnson, Nutting, and Scott. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 96, Professional Assistance Programs. This was not a committee bill, Madam Chairman, and the Senate sponsor of this bill is on the Appropriations Committee and won't be here. So with your indulgence, I'll just wing it a little bit. Madam Chairman, we have
programs for drug and alcohol abuse now, which allow folks that have a license, under a licensed practitioner, to enter into a confidential program to deal with their addiction and to retain their license and to become back, to deal with their addiction and come back and serve the public. This adds to those programs by having mental or behavioral health referrals as well, Madam Chairman. So that's all this bill does, is expand those same programs that we have for drug and alcohol addiction to other types of mental illness, which might be depression, bipolar. You can imagine all sorts of things, Madam Chairman, but it allows someone to go to their licensing authority to confidentially deal with their with those issues, get some help, and stay in their profession. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 96. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 96 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 147. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 147, sponsored by Representative Miller, Infrastructure Authority Energy Transmission, an act relating to the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority. It was referred to Committee number 9, Minerals Business Economic Development, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, O2, Cole, Cooper, Hines, and Rothfuss. Senator Hines, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 147. There are no standing committee amendment, and I'll yield to the co-sponsor, Senator Cooper.
Senator Cooper.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Fellow Senators, House Bill 147, Infrastructure Authority Energy Transmission. As the bill introduction explains, the amendments to the statute will give Wyoming Infrastructure Authority the ability to expand its purpose and objectives to include coal distribution facilities and ports within its purview. The need for these amendments has been brought about by several events that many of us know that have happened in recent years with the coal industry here in the States, mainly greenhouse gas issues and also regional haze and then other issues also. And matter of fact, the last time the BLM conducted a coal lease sale in Wyoming, they received no bid in one of their allotments and rejected another bid. Needless to say, we're simply need to broaden our markets and find more opportunities for the sale of Wyoming coal. And one of our best shots at this would be the overseas export market, because there is considerable demand in the overseas markets. The governor and some of our distinguished senators here have made overseas trips to explore the possibilities for coal exports, the coal export market, and their report back to us has been pretty encouraging and pretty positive. Countries such as Japan, Taiwan, South Korea, and possibly India and Germany are all interested in possibly purchasing Wyoming coal. Just Japan alone could purchase up to 160 million tons of Wyoming coal per year. Wyoming coal is clean burning and low sulfur and low ash content. These countries are interested in cleaning up their coal burning facilities and becoming more environmentally responsible. They cannot get there with the Australian and Indonesian coal that they are currently burning. And in addition, both the Australian coal industry and the Indonesian coal industry are at their capacity for production. If we expect to have a viable coal industry in Wyoming for the future, we have an opportunity to fill the needs of these growing foreign markets with our Wyoming coal. In 2011, the latest figures that are available, Wyoming only exported 4.4 million tons of coal out of 440 million tons, which is about 1%. This bill is a way to get the get the ball rolling towards those overseas coal exports, providing a means to finance coal distribution and port facilities. And some people might say that why would we do this if the industry might do it itself? Well, the idea is to encourage them. As many of you remember, the project we had several years ago on the Kern River project pipeline out of Wyoming to Central California, that was encouraged by the legislature by providing a funding mechanism with the pipeline infrastructure, but yet the industry went out once they knew we were behind it and backed it. They did it themselves, and hopefully that may be the same encouragement here. It's an incentive for the industry to get involved and to give the message that Wyoming here is here to assist their efforts. The Infrastructure Authority uses the sale of bonds to accomplish their objectives. The bonds are privately issued and are not backed by faith and credit of the state. And this is all laid out in the statutes under Title 37. So going to the bill, Madam Chairman, I'd like to go to page 2 on the bill. You will notice that on line 16, we've added the word energy, and this is just a matter of the board members and what some of the requirements that the board members on the Infrastructure Authority have to have, and this just requires this additional experience. And then turning over to page 2, we see we have the definition on line 5 through 8 of facilities. And so we've added in there, you can see the words or energy, and on line 6 and 7, including distribution facilities and ports. And this is just adds to the definition of what the authority has under the definition of facilities. And then down in the next section there, section little a on lines 12, on down to the end of the page, you see we've made the same changes, added energy and coal distribution facilities and ports. This is just add to the purpose of what the authority can do and is authorized to do. And then the rest of the amendments on the rest of the bill are merely conforming amendments to line up with the amendments in the first part of the bill. And this, Madam Chairman, with that, I'd stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill, Senator Hicks.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, just a quick question. I like the idea that we're giving the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority over ports in other states. We should do that for a lot of other things. But I guess that's the question I have when I look at it, when it uses the word ports in here, and given the Wyoming Infrastructure Authority, the way I read the bill, this would actually allow them to go out there and lease or rent facilities in another state. Unless there's a port here in Wyoming I'm not aware of. But just a question on that issue. As to the way the bill reads, they could go out there and do that. Am I reading it correct?
Senator Cooper.
Madam Chairman, that is correct, the good senator from Baggs. This does allow that, and that is allowed currently under the Infrastructure Authority for transmission lines and so forth, for them actually to own, operate, or lease those facilities. So, Madam Chair, that's the way I interpret it. Is as far as outside the states go, I don't have the resident expert who is Senator, good Senator from Fremont County, is not here, so I'll have to forego that one.
Further discussion on the bill? Question on the bill? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 147. Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 147 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 11. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 11. Controlled Substances, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the Wyoming Controlled Substances Act. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer, Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report. It do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 11, Controlled Substances. Madam Chairman, there are no amendments to it, I don't think. And for a discussion of this great bill with a lot of great words in it, I yield to my colleague from Cheyenne, Senator Esquivel.
Senator Esquivel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move the introduction of Senate file House Bill number 11 and ask for your favorable recommendation. And as you all can see, it's kind of ironic. It's titled Controlled Substances, and it'd be nice if they were controlled, but I guess that's the reason we have this bill, because there's some use of these control these substances, which are basically fall under the generic term of kind of synthetic marijuana, I guess is the best way of describing it. And this bill basically just adds various other chemicals or other formulas that have been created by street chemists, and they're known on the streets by various terms. Spice is the one that I think most of us are more familiar with because I had a bill on that a couple years ago. But as you can see in page 2 and 3 and so on, the majority of the bill is basically just adding these other chemicals, these other combinations to the controlled substance statutes. And this is at the suggestion of an attorney general's opinion. Might add that the County Attorneys Association is in favor of this legislation. Because if you want to, you know, some of these people are very creative, and they know that if they change the combination of some of these street drugs, basically, by statute, they're not illegal. So this bill is intended to bring some of those other combinations into conformity or inclusion into the statute. And if you want to have a real nice lesson on chemistry, I guess you could go to 35-7-1011, Controlled Substances, and there's about two pages of all sorts of different chemical terms. And I understand that my good friend from Senate District 21 would be willing to pronounce all these chemicals for you if you so desire, but that's basically what the bill is about, and I ask for your favorable recommendation. Thank you, ma'am.
Discussion on the bill? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 11, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 11 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 20. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 20, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety Fees, and Act Relating to Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety. It was referred to Committee number 5, Agricultural State Public Lands and Water Resources, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, Hicks, and Johnson, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator?
Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises and report, I move House Bill 20, and I yield the floor to Senator Johnson to explain the bill.
Senator?
Or Senator Case, either one, I don't care.
Senator Case.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, this bill came about because of some concerns that our budget staff had about an ongoing 300 section of our budget bill that had been continued year after year after year. The Section 308 of the budget said that notwithstanding WS 359108E, for the period beginning July 1, 2012 and ending June 30, 2014, the State Department of Fire Prevention and Electrical Safety is hereby authorized to charge fees not in excess of fees authorized under that statute to any entity for which it forms any plan, inspection, or review. Well, the purpose of this bill, Madam Chairman, is to conform our statute to the practice that we've been implementing through our budget and to take an exception that was put in the budget and make it conform with the statute. The truth of the matter is that the State Fire Marshal does not charge fees for schools, but schools have to be built, of course, according to code. But what this bill does is to take out the exception, it says on line 12 of the bill, for publicly owned buildings, the department may charge fees. And you can see the old language is for publicly owned buildings other than school buildings. So the statute permitted, did not permit the State Fire Marshal to impose fees, but 12 years of budgets did permit the State Fire Marshal to impose fees. I understand they never impose fees, but either way, this makes it conform, makes our statute conform to the practice. And they don't have any intention in my mind to begin to impose the fees.
Further discussion on the bill? Question having been called. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 20, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 20 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 22. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 22, sponsored by the Revenue Committee. Mineral Tax Audit Interest Rate, an act relating to revenue and taxation. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Henderson, 28. Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flatren. No, Senator Case, Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable consideration of House Bill 22. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask for that amendment to be read in at this time.
House Bill number 22, standing committee amendment number 1 to engrossed copy, page 3, line 10.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. For further, I would move that amendment of Senate file or House Bill 22. And for further explanation on the bill and the amendment, I would defer to the good senator from Campbell County.
Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 22 reduces the interest rate on a tax audit on minerals from 18% to 22%. And just this is, I did not hand this one out, but basically, if you can see it from that distance, it is just showing you that when this was implemented in 1980, I even had a welding truck with interest rate of almost 19%. And that's when this was implemented, 18% interest on an audit. Now, this is not changing delinquent taxes, you not paying your taxes, you not reporting property. That still stays as it is. What this is doing is just saying on audits, if the mineral industry is audited, going back however many years, they do 3 years at a time, that the interest rate that will accrue should there be findings of a net underpayment by the mineral companies, it'll pay 12% interest on all the taxes back, not 18%. On your desk is a handout. It may have House Bill 22 on it. It may not. This shows you the real problem here. And, Madam Chair, I'd like to dispense with the amendment, then I can explain the rest. The amendment goes into page 3, 6, 9, 13, 16, 19, and 23. What it does is every section of this bill is very simple, but every mineral has its own section. That's why it's so many pages. So this goes into every page. Page 3, line 6, and let me get to the right page. Page 3, line 10, and this is the same language we're going to delete on every one of these, where it says, within the same taxing jurisdiction for the same tax year. and then calculate. So the new language will say, starting on line 7 and in every other section, in calculating interest regarding ad valorem tax, the county treasurer shall first complete a net deficiency amount after subtracting any offsetting credit and then calculate any interest due. With the original language in there, line 10, with the same taxing jurisdiction for the same tax year, you could have actually in 1 year overpaid your taxes, and they don't give you interest for that. The next year, you underpaid your tax. The next year, you might even overpaid again. But you add the 3 years together, you actually overpaid. But what that line would have said was, in that year you were in deficit, that you underpaid, you owe us that payment plus interest. And what the original intent is, and what they do today, is they take the net of the audit, overpayments, underpayments, overpayments, and they add it up, and they figure out if you have an overpayment or an underpayment, and you pay that, plus you pay the interest. With that language put in there, it meant that every year you've underpaid, you had paid that plus interest, and then the next year the county would owe you money, and counties don't pay interest. And in fact, they usually ask for a payment plan because they don't have the cash on hand. Completely understandable. They usually tend to spend what they do collect in taxes. So that's what the amendment does, Madam Chair. I stand for questions on the amendment, and I'm dispense with the amendment if we can.
Is there a discussion on the amendment? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I do have one question on it. And basically what it comes down to is if you're aggregating the 3 years and you have a deficiency, you underpay, you overpay, you underpay, we'll say. I aggregate that over the 3 years based on this calculation. What is the date basis for when I begin accruing, or how do I calculate the accrual time for the interest of the penalty when I do this time aggregation over the 3 years? It makes perfect sense to me if it was on a year-by-year basis. I get how that would be done. I don't know how the math is going to work if we do it after the amendment.
Senator Von Fladen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the way the statutes read is it's the January of the year in which the final audit is completed. They take prime plus 4, never less than 12, and the counties have taken that to be just 18%. So if it takes 3 years to do the audit and their net is a negative $100,000, they take 18% of $100,000 compounded back to when they started the audit. It varies a little bit county to county. What this tries to do is make it consistent. So they should take it just that year and that year's interest rate, not try to figure every year's interest rate. Oh, you didn't pay in January of 2007, so it's this, but then your deficit is 2009, so we'll take the interest of 2009. What was it? Okay. And then add that together. They're saying by striking this language out of there, it'll be the year they finally come up with the net results of the audit. But they'll retro it back. So if it's 18-19% even, well, these days it would be 18%, they'll go back to the beginning. So you're 4 years into this. This is one of the reasons for this bill. You're 4 years already into it. You may protest the way they audited, blah, blah, blah. You're 5 or 6 years into it. They compound the interest starting that year's interest clear back whenever they started the audit, 3 years back. The beginning plus the year before that, because you report your ad valorem a year after that. So it's 4 years old, minimally, and 18% interest from the day they finally settle with you. I hope I answered your question. No, it's confusing. Yeah. I agree.
Senator Landon.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. And in that same regard, I guess I'm trying to understand that part of the bill, but I also heard you to say that over that four-year period of time, let's say a company overpaid, that same situation would occur in reverse then. Was there any talk in committee about a percentage rate of return for companies that overpay? Because I thought I heard you say that there is no interest in return. So if they've overpaid for 2 out of those 4 years or whatever, they're just out that interest money or whatever. And then in return, we're charging 18 at this point today.
Madam Chair, I think
Senator Von Flader.
I think that's germane to the amendment. I just want to clarify that. And
yes.
I'll sit down and shut up.
Further discussion on the amendment. Question having been called on the amendment, all those in favor of Senator Von Flader's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill Number 22, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The amendment has been adopted. We're back on the bill. Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm sure I put more questions into the minds of others. But what I will try to do is explain that on page 2, as I explain the bill, page 2, 15 through 19 was just cleanup. That needed to be struck. That was archaic language. They do not do that anymore. So that was struck out. The rest is new language you see on page 3, and this is the same through the bill because each mineral takes a section itself. But line 7 through 16 is the heart of this in calculating interest regarding ad valorem tax. Remember, there's severance tax here, too, but that's a state issue. So the state takes the audits. They do the audit on ad valorem and minerals severance tax at the same time. So you have the state interest in this for severance tax. You have the county interest in this for property tax. So this is the language here. And it says, because it's never really addressed, the county treasurer shall first complete a net deficiency amount after subtracting any offsetting credit. And then with the amendment, we go to line 11 and then calculate any interest due. So, if you take this piece of paper that I handed out on your desk, it shows you could be up to 7 years trying to settle this mineral audit. They go back 3, but you got to remember you didn't report your ad valorem, your property tax, to the year before that, and then you pay in March or September, whatever our payments are due, September, May, something like that. So they're auditing 3 years back, plus it's already a year late. They may take 1 or 2 years even to get the audit done, so you're up to 5 or 6 years. If they add all those 3 years they audited together and you have a deficit, you've underpaid, you will get 18% interest today all the way back, might be 5 or 6, 7 years ago, and compounded every year, where this takes, instead of 18, this bill takes the 12%. Same formula, same. We have a problem reporting ad valorem, and that's something I'm hoping the Revenue Committee will take up on the interim. But right now, they will go back to the very beginning, take the 18% interest, compound it from the day that you were deficit or the amount you owe, not when you made the deficit. You might have had a year you overpaid, or you might have broke even, underpaid on the second year, maybe broke even on the third year. They'll go back to the beginning audit, compound the interest 18% from that day. That's what we're collecting today. This bill only says, do whatever you're doing, but it's 12% is the max amount of interest. That's the only change this bill does. I stand for questions. I know I've put plenty into a lot of people's minds, so I'll sit down.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Earlier today, I had a conversation with the county assessor. And to me, she said, she would ask that we consider these comments when reviewing the bill. I could have well copied this and circulated it, and you could have read it on your own, but it came up rather rapidly. So if I can, I would like to just read the statement that she makes. This does come from a constituent. I offer it for your information without regard to position on the bill at this time. She says, in regard to House Bill 22, one of the biggest issues of interest due from an audit starts with an increasing and or inaccurate reporting of values under self-reporting systems. House Bill 22 only decreases the penalty or consequence of untimely or inaccurate reporting. It does not resolve the problem, and it could be argued that it may actually increase the problem. It has been said that the, quote, complex Wyoming laws, unquote, are also a contributing factor. But if the complexity of the laws were the biggest cause, would we not expect to have a more balanced number of audit decreases and increases? Statistics show that the audit results are overwhelmingly increases taxpayers under reporting, which begs the question, is the taxpayer using the complex laws, quote unquote, to their advantage. Another concern with the bill is the inequity that it causes between classes of taxpayers regarding interest or delinquent taxes identified through audits. Personal property and oil and gas equipment taxes are based on a self-reporting system similar to mineral production. When an audit performed by a county assessor results in an increase due to underreporting system, the taxpayer is billed for taxes bold print with interest at a rate of 18% for the years underreported up to 5 years. I offer that for your information. I will go in and have you this copied and circulated, and you will have it so you can read it and think about it. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd ask the bringer of the bill perhaps for some scenarios on second reading where you give examples and provide specifics about the timing of events so that I can track it with numbers if that would be acceptable and the body can understand a little bit more about that aggregation approach. I don't have any problem, I don't think, with it, but I may not be understanding it. I do have one question, which is if this really does just change the rate to 12%, I am curious about why the language exists or was added in the statutes. For example, on page 3 between lines 7 and 16, there's a lot of new language that isn't specifically dealing with the shift from the 18% to the 12%. So if you could provide a little more description about why that language is necessary, if it truly is just taking the rate down. And finally, Madam Chairman, just one comment to address specifically the county commissioner's concerns that we just heard about from the good senator from Converse County. And that's, if you think about 12%, I think as a county, I would still like a late payment if I'm getting a 12% yield on it in a 7-year punishment time, effectively. I'm getting a 100% penalty, and I don't have access to any investments that yield 12%. So I would still, as the county commissioner, be cheering for underpayment and then a 12% interest rate after those years. I don't know that we've lowered it so much that there would ever be encouragement of abuse. If we got down to 3%, 2%, or 0%, then yeah, it'll be gamed. But no one's going to game 12%. At this point in time, and I see that the language is specific to float it with prime, so if it does go up, then it goes to a maximum of 18%. So I personally, Madam Chairman, I'm not particularly worried about the possibility of gaming it. It's not in the corporate interest to do any gaming, but I am still curious about the math and would like a little follow-up on that.
Further discussion. Senator Von Flatern.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did the good senator from Glen Rock, in our committee where the county treasurers were not happy about. They wanted the full 18%. It is very complicated in figuring minerals, and most of the time it's done inadvertently. And the audits go back, and they, well, we tried to do the coal, revaluing coal at the mine mouth versus, and that bill finally just died here last year, the year before, where it was just really too complicated to explain. And we've had several in my county, which is really one of the bigger offending counties in the fact that when we implemented this audit process and actually contracted it out for a while in the 80s on oil field in particular, they finally found so many discrepancies, they contracted out the auditing process and said, and these auditing companies for a while were making a percentage of whatever they found. And it boiled down to more, it straightened up a lot of bad actors with that, by doing that. There's no doubt about that. But then what they also found was enough complications in interpretation of the rules, especially on this coal value, that they inadvertently, and then they'd go to court. We settled one not too long ago with one of our big producers down by Wright, Wyoming, that we lost, and we had to come up with it. They do not pay interest. That was a point brought up earlier. The counties do not pay interest back if they owe you money. In fact, they, as I said earlier, tend to pay, spend their taxes and put it in the savings, and they don't want to pull it out of a CD that's getting them a whopping 1%. But then they ask for payment plans from the
mineral company, and then they pay you back over time, 1 or 2 or 3 years, to try to pay back this overpayment that you made to them. So there's one of the issues. The other issue, and this describes it well, and I'll get you some more actual data you can work with, and you see it also talks about compounding interest at the bottom and what the difference that'll make, is that it goes back 3 years, and truly it's 4 years they're looking at, and you're 5 and 6 years, and when they assess that interest rate, you're assessing interest rate on 5, 6, and 7 years worth of compounded rate. There's been times where they've hit the coal mines up with a higher interest penalty than back taxes because it had taken 6 or 7 years. They objected to their findings and ended up in court, and then the court had to reassess. And, you know, the ones that they've lost, they've actually paid more in interest than they paid in the actual penalty, the underpayment, underreporting, underpayment of their taxes. As far as 12 or 18%, yes, it does not change the fact that you do not report your own property. If you own property and you do not report it to the assessor or you've underreported it, yes, you are liable for that property for up to 5 years at 18%. We did not change that at all. The bill shows that. But what it does say is that generally, underreporting a property, personal property, houses, your whatever may be affixed to your property that you changed, is generally the difference between the, what you've been reporting and that, which is a smaller amount, plus it can be picked up in that year. You can, there's no audit required. They can go back if they like. You may have not had it that long, but we did not change that 18%. That's still reporting. 18% wouldn't be a bad deal if you reported your ad valorem, let's say, in December, and they did the audit the next spring or something. You'd only have that 6 months. But we're talking 5 to 7 years worth of compounded interest on underreported, which was an interpretation by your company versus what the county auditor or the State Department of Revenue actually found. So there's an interpretation issue. So it's not a malicious attempt to work your way around the system. And the 18% is just a little onerous to be putting on anybody that interpreted the statutes or the way they're supposed to report differently than what the Department of Revenue finally came up with. So that's all this bill does. They're still going to do it the same way they've always done it. We just said the maximum interest is 12%.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thanks, Madam Chairman. Just to reiterate one question on page 3, lines 7 through 16, if it's being done the way that it's always been done, why do we need this additional language?
Senator Barnard.
Mr. Chairman, there's kind of two problems here. It's been a long time since I've been a county commissioner, but let me tell you what my perception of this is. The first problem is the auditors. You have a certain amount of taxes, and you're sitting there waiting to make your budget, and the auditors don't get their audit done. So you're sitting there for 2 or 3 months, and you don't know how much money is going to come in. That's one of the first problems. The second problem is, and I only know about ad valorem taxes. I don't know about the mineral coal business. But when I was a county commissioner, these oil companies would protest every single year. Protest. And they take their money, and sometimes they'll take and invest that money and make 50, 20, 100% on it. So they don't want to pay you. And they'll go as long as they can. Meanwhile, the county's waiting for their money. They can't get it. So are you going to pay your bill at higher? Are you going to pay it faster and respond better at 18% or 12%? That's what we're looking at.
Further discussion on the bill? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Madam Chairman, the question to the committee in that is, did you undertake an assessment of whether or not you could practically provide for two different rates, one rate for the producer that is actually just made an error in the calculation and there's a legitimate good faith dispute at the lower rate, and then providing those that are simply delinquent or refusing to pay, or actually you can determine that they intentionally underpaid at the higher 18% rate. You know, part of what's happening here is that if you're an individual and you fail to pay, since your rate is established, you got to pay the full rate or you pay your 18%. Now we're talking about, have we really made a distinction between those instances where there's been non-payment or refusal to pay that ought to be at 18%, and those where there's simply a methodology that is complex enough where good faith people would come up with two different results. They made their best shot at it, and under those circumstances, it ought to be a lower rate.
Further discussion? Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was trying to look up the exact point of line 7 through, or 50. Was it 7 through on page 3? Line 7, in calculating interest. I don't think that language actually exists. I'll look it up later. To the good senator from Glen Rock, I hope I answered your questions as to how this bill and what their opposition to it was. And if I didn't, I'd certainly be glad to go over each item with you. But I need to also look up a little bit more about why that new language is there. So I will ask the questions or answer any more questions.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you. Just quickly, in regard to the proposal that I put forth, the person who gave that to me is sitting in the balcony at this point, and sometime I will talk to her and to see if, in fact, the question was answered. Thank you.
Senator Peterson.
Madam Chairman, I don't recall the committee during the interim discussing different rates for parties that purposely misled our individual counties in their giving this information. Again, we ask these mineral companies to estimate, and sometimes they hit the mark, most of the times they don't. Market changes. We know that we're a mineral producing state, and so the thing that we heard as part of our testimony up there in committee is that we have probably the most complicated system of severance tax in probably the nation. And of course it's natural because we're a mineral producing state. But so the whole effort, Madam Chairman, of the committee during the interim was simply to try to be realistic in the interest that was being charged. And we'll hand out that graph tomorrow. We were kind of caught off guard today being it added to the list, but we'll get that graph to you tomorrow showing the interest rate, and we'll also get the numbers and give you some examples of some of these problems that have existed as far as not just the interest rate, but also the timeline. That was the main concern. We did hear, and you've received all emails from different county officers of the problems that this would cause with the difference of 12% versus 18% handling taxpayers differently. We heard that late on in the interim. This bill had already been drafted. You know, that's a topic for another day. And I can assure you that there will be an interim topic this next interim of how we handle that difference, because it's not fair, but as we lower interest rates for these penalties. But I can assure you that 18% versus 12% on some of the figures that we're talking about with some of these big companies, 12% is still pretty substantial for most of these companies, and it would get their attention and get the problem resolved in a fairly quick way. So, Madam Chairman, I would just add to the debate that's where the committee stands, and that's why the bill was brought to address those two issues as far as interest rates and improving the timeline. 7 years is to get these things resolved is just too long, and so that's why the language is in this bill as it is. And again, I would stand for questions.
Senator Esquivel.
I guess a question I have, a little confused on page. Well, I'm quite a bit confused. In page 3, line 11, it says that the Board of County Commissioners shall be bound by any decision made by the Department of Revenue in the course of an audit, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess I was just wondering, is it just the county commissioners that will be bound by any decision made by the Department of Revenue, or would the taxpayer be bound? Or I don't know. I guess I just need some discussion on that part.
Senator Von Flader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That is part of the newest language. A lot of that language is in statute, but bound by any decision made by the Department of Revenue is relatively new decision, and they're the ones conducting the audits. That's why when they come up with the deficit or overpayments, then the county doesn't then go and find another auditing firm to see if that's true or not. They are asked to agree or bound by the decision of the Department of Revenue, who is the auditing actor, or the Department of Audit, actually.
Further discussion? Question having been called, all those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 22, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 22 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 33. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill number 33, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, Jury Pool Selection, Archaic Language, and Act Relating to Juries. It was referred to Committee number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, Hicks, and Schiffer. Senator Schiffer, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise to report and do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 33, Jury Pool Selection, Archaic Language. For a discussion of this fantastic bill, I yield to Senator Christensen.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Chairman. Members of the Senate, jury pool selection archaic language. Doesn't sound all that exciting, but I'd like to take you on a little jaunt through this. A little bit of Wyoming history, if I can. Well, let's just roll over to page 2. And for a sense of what we're cleaning up over here, on line 5 of page 2, we're going to talk about some of the language to be instructed. The base jury list may be expanded by including some other source or sources of names. That's kind of vague. So we're going to clean that up. And then down on page 7, this is one of those interesting things that keeps reappearing, jury box number 1. You'll see that throughout this, jury box number 1. And then jury box number 3, but where's the jury box number 2? It really makes you wonder what's happening here. We're cleaning that up. Down at the bottom of the page, on line 21, the first words that are cleaned up, shake the box. And there's got to be a better way, and sure enough, they came up with it. At the very end of that, on 24, they changed it to choose the prospective jurors from the baseline jury list using a random method. Over on page 3, this draw your attention just for example down to line 20. We're going to be getting rid of the word drawing in quite a few places. Now, in my country, drawing involves oil paints and pastels. But over in KC, that might have to do with six shooters and gunplay. So we're just clearing that up. It's really about selection, not drawing. You can see there's quite a bit of this type of language that's been cleaned up through in here. And, again, language that really creates questions. Down at the bottom of page 4 on line 23, there's very specific ways on how to impanel a jury to include folding the ballots so the names are concealed. And it really draws you into some archaic methods. And over on page 5, it goes along cleaning up a lot of language that, when you really study it, is fairly challenging to understand. And my hat's off to our clerk of courts to work with this kind of stuff, but we think this is going to make it a lot better. On page 6, we still have references at the bottom to the jury box or the ballot box number 1, cleaning that up. Over on page 7 at the bottom, there's an interesting change here. When it talks about procedures for maintaining the jury list, in the old language, it says jurors may they're selected who selects the jury lists and ballot boxes and the ballots. This clears that up, and it goes from May language to down on line 22 of page 7. It says the Supreme Court shall. It changes the duties, and instead of May, it clarifies who's going to be coming up with these jury lists. At the top of page 8, on line 2, now the Supreme Court will be coming up with a list, and nowadays they will be using the Wyoming driver's license. And if you remember, when you come to work in Wyoming, that's when you get a Wyoming driver's license. And so that's how we'll be working that a little more formal, and also it helps with a more complete selection of who's in your community. On down at the bottom, bottom of page 8, the selection and members of the terms of a grand jury. Here the duty was the responsibility of the clerk of the district court at an order of a district court. They'll impanel the grand jury. That changes over on page 9 up at the top. It says the district court granting the petition to convene a grand jury shall impanel the grand jury. And so it takes it off the responsibility of the clerk of court to the judge empowering the grand jury. And again, that list comes now from the Supreme Court. Over on page 10, you can see up toward the top of the language that's been struck on line 5. Now we're into jury box number 3. And that is the mystery. Where did jury box number 2 go? And are those the real names that we should have had on the grand jury? We're cleaning up and getting rid of the jury box method where we're shaking boxes. And that really, that's repeated again online or on page 11. That's the essence of it. There's a bunch of confusing languages in there. Some great work by the Joint Judiciary Committee to clean that up, make it readable, and reduce the equipment used for this process. With that, stand for questions.
Discussion on the bill? Senator Hines.
Madam Chairman, a couple of questions or maybe just a little explanation on the change, I believe, in where the names maybe comes from Wyoming driver's license list. A little bit of if you have to get a driver's license when you come here to work for the summer and then you're gone for the summer to school or somewhere else, are they then on the list that can be called? And then there's this issue that I haven't read completely through enough to understand on page 10, where line 8, 9 in there, where they're talking about residing 5 miles from a city or town where the trial is to be held. I wonder just what that has to do with selecting a jury.
Discussion, Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. When they send out these notifications, as I understand it, if they're not in the area and don't receive the notification or not around anymore, the district courts work that out. And so the fact that you have a license and are somewhere else, I don't think you're going to have to return to deal with that. I think it's more of a notification. As for the 5 miles over, and I believe it's on the top of page 11, existing language. And I'm finding it on 11 also and page 12. I thought I heard you say page 10. Good, Senator, and I might have. Hope it's on page 10 also. All existing language. Sounds like they may look at that another time if that's important to them.
Further discussion? Further discussion on the bill? You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Schiffer's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill number 33, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill number 33 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
You have heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion is carried.
The reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. House Joint Resolution 1 do pass. House Bill 24 do pass. House Bill 25 do pass amended. House Bill 32 do pass amended. House Bill 43 do pass amended. House Bill 71 do pass. House Bill 91 do pass. House Bill 96 do pass. House Bill 147 do pass. House Bill 11 do pass. House Bill 20 do pass. House Bill 22 do pass amended. And House Bill 33 do pass. Senator Kraft, Chairman.
Senator Kraft.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
Heard the motion. All those in favor say aye. Opposed? The report is adopted. Reports from standing committees.
February the 26th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 47, engrossed. Government Royalty Revenues Definition, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Peterson, Von Flader, and no, Senators Case and Emmerich, Senator Peterson, Chairman. February the 26th, 2014, Mr. President, your Committee Number 3, Revenue, to whom was referred House Bill 147, Streamline Sales Tax Amendments, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flederen. No, Senator Case, Senator Peterson, Chairman. What? Didn't I say that? She tells me I didn't say Senate or House Bill 145, Streamline Sales Tax Amendments, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, 28, Emmerich, Peterson, Von Flederen. No, Senator Case, Senator Peterson, Chairman. February the 26th, 2014, Mr. President, your committee number 12, Rules and Procedures, to whom was referred House Bill 37, engrossed, revisers bill, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Bebout, Kraft, Nicholas, Ross, and Rothfuss, Senator Ross, Chairman.
Signing with rolled axe. We are at that order of signing and rolled axe. Enrolled Act Number 1, the original Senate File 9, reading clerk will read.
Enrolled original Senate File Number 9, Enrolled Act Number 1. I didn't do that right. I didn't. I'll get the next one.
I am about to sign Senate Enrolled Act Number 1, being original Senate File 9. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 15 being original, Senate Enrolled Act 2 being original Senate File 15.
Senate Enrolled Act number 2 being original Senate File 15.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 2 being original Senate File 15. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 3 being original Senate File 26. Read quick reading.
Senate Enrolled Act number 3 being original Senate File 26.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 3 being original Senate File 26. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 4 being original Senate File 27. Reading clerk, read it.
Senate Enrolled Act number 4 being original Senate File 27.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 4 being original Senate File 27. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 5 being original Senate File 29.
Senate Enrolled Act number 5 being original Senate File 29.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 5, okay, being original Senate File 29. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 6, being original Senate File 50.
Senate Enrolled Act number 6, being original Senate File 50, an act relating to the State Miners Hospital Board and account.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 6, being original Senate File 50. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number, Enrolled Act number 7, being original Senate File 54.
Senate Enrolled Act number 7 being original Senate File 54, an act relating to reports to the legislature.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act number 7 being original Senate File 54. I have so signed. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, February 17th. 27.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. President. Privilege of the floor.
You may.
Mr. President, in the gallery we have the good folks from the Mosaic, Multicultural Mosaic Foundation. Tonight they're hosting a dinner over at Little America. Don't know if you've ever visited with them or traveled with them, but they're some good people with a lot of perspective on what's going on the other side of the world and have a lot of value. And they're very interested in us, so I'd encourage you to not only welcome them, but attend their event tonight for a good dinner and some nice culture.
Welcome to the Senate, and thank you for hosting a dinner tonight. Announcement, Senator Geis.
Your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Land, Water Resources, will meet Thursday night upon adjournment in S-15 to take up House Bill 72, engrossed ominous water bill planning.
Senator Landon.
Mr. President, ever since I got down here, that good senator from Moreland has been building that omnibus. Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet in about 15 minutes to take up House Bill 88, Engrossed Postdated Checks, House Bill 12, 80-mile-an-hour speed limit, and House Joint Resolution 5, Moose Wilson Roadway.
Further announcements. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. President. The committee number three, revenue, will meet for the last time tomorrow, Thursday, February 27th, 30 minutes afternoon recess in room S16 to take up House Bill 135, small business investment credit number of employees, House Bill 154, exemption for gratuities, House Bill 21, engrossed property tax exemption charity.
Further announcements? Hearing none, you've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion's carried. The Senate stands adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday, February 27th.